Philo tried to reconcile his Greek philosophical training with a comprehensive knowledge of Jewish religious tradition, based primarily on the Bible. Now, he read the Bible most probably not in its original Hebrew. His knowledge of Hebrew was very, very rudimentary. It was very, very simple, we think, very elementary. He probably read the Bible in its Greek translation, known as the Septuagint. This was the standard Greek translation that would be used by Jews at first in the Hellenistic world, and it would ultimately also be embraced by the church. Much of Philo's writings are in the form of a commentary to the Bible. But he employed, as he was explaining the Bible, he employed an allegorical approach as a means of presenting the laws and even the stories with a far deeper meaning than would appear at face value. For instance, if Abraham was told to migrate from his land, right? For Philo, this is not simply a physical migration, but it was it came to symbolize the soul's departure from bodily confinement, which clearly is a well-known Greek idea, in particular part of Stoic philosophy. The idea that the soul is within sort of a jail and is constantly yearning to break away. And in Abraham's case, his soul was yearning to break away from the confinement of an idolatrous world. In his case, the world of astrology. Remember, Abraham comes from Ur of the Chaldeans, and the word Chaldean in the Greek mind always represented astrology. So this is a spiritual migration. And this is the type of interpretation that Philo uses as he reads the Bible. In other words, yes, there are stories, but these stories really have a spiritual meaning to them. The rabbis could have lived with that type of interpretation were it only used to interpret the story parts of the Bible. But Philo employed allegory to show that the laws of the Bible, the commandments, also possess a deeper and more profound meaning than what meets the eye. For instance, just one of many, many examples, Philo knows that according to the Bible, the signs of a kosher animal, an animal that may be eaten, are two: a cloven or a split hoof and a chewing of the cud. So for instance, whereas a pig has a split hoof but does not chew its cud, a pig would of course not be considered a kosher animal. Philo says, yes, these are the signs that are in the Bible as you read it, but they really come to suggest traits, spiritual traits, that all of mankind should strive for. So the split hoof comes to symbolize the capability of distinction. In other words, of going in two paths, distinguishing between good and evil. The chewing of the cud is the power of what? Of constantly going over things, rethinking things. And so what he's doing is he's spiritualizing, as it were, the Bible. He's understanding it and attributing it to it a far deeper meaning. Rabbinic Judaism would frown on such exercises, although I don't know that they actually had Philo. I doubt that they had actually Philo in front of them, but they knew that other people were doing this. And of course, the rabbis would be very uncomfortable, because if there is a deeper meaning to the uncovered text and things are not quite how they appear, where does that leave us with the practical face value imperative? Maybe once I've arrived at the inner meaning, the practical is no longer imperative. I've pierced through to the essence of the Bible itself. And so the potential for doing away with the practical keeping of religious law was obvious. Philo never drew those conclusions, those practical conclusions. He probably continued to keep the law. But it's not surprising that it was the church and not the rabbis that would preserve his writings. The second major Jewish philosopher that I'd like to discuss lived in Iraq in the 10th century. His name is Saadia Gaon. He lived from 882 to 942. The word Gaon, it's a Hebrew word, and it refers to the heads of the rabbinical academies in Babylonia in the post-Talmudic period, from around the 7th to the 11th century. Saadia himself was born in Egypt, but he moved to Babylonia, and he became a very, very prominent leader there of the rabbinic movement. Sa'adia encountered a number of challenges that confronted Judaism in the 10th century.